10. Commandeering a Ride. Modo awakened several times in the night, sweating and trembling from nightmares. At one point, he unintentionally slipped off his mask and tossed it to the floor. He heard Octavia moving about on the other side of the privacy screen. In a panic, he felt around until he found the mask and pulled it over his face, then slept fitfully until morning. In the bathroom, he changed his twisted face and body back to the shape of Mr. Walken, gritting his teeth and smothering his groans of pain. He dressed and, looking in the mirror, decided it was time to surprise Octavia. He oiled his hair, parting it in the center instead of at the side. He grinned. It suited the aquiline features of this face. "Tavia, are you awake?" he asked. "Yes, Modo. You can fold up the screen." She was already in a dark grey dress and was tying back her hair with a ribbon. These were the sorts of things a husband was privy to, his wife fixing her hair. "Good morning to you," she said. Her eyes looked heavy, suggesting she'd also had a restless sleep. "Your hair is extremely fashionable. I shall be proud to take your arm as we promenade about New York." Modo smiled. "I spent an extra 10 seconds on it." Something moving under the door caught his eye. An envelope. "It looks like work has found us." He opened it and removed a telegram that read, "ERWAIV, SFZMSYW, stop. PEX and PRSK, stop. QSRIA, XS, QRF, stop. LMVI, WLMT, RS, P&P, EX, SRGI, stop. XEOI, TLSVS, IUYMT, stop. FI, TVSJIWWMSREP, stop. What is it?" Octavia asked. Modo took a moment to decipher the message, using a simple code system Mr. Socrates had taught him years ago. The note says, "Answer obvious, stop. Lat and long, stop. Money wired to MNB, stop. Hire ship to L&L at once, stop. Take photo equip, stop. Be professional, stop." "Even in telegrams, Mr. Socrates has to lecture us," she said. "I can almost see him wagging his finger." "I should have guessed the numbers were latitude and longitude," he said. "Oh, Modo, don't beat yourself up. Sometimes the simplest answers are the hardest to find. Now, where exactly are we supposed to go?" She sat at the mahogany table and looked down at the carved map. "Assuming this is accurately carved, it's right here." He tapped on a point about an inch below Iceland. "Sounds dreary and cold. Good thing we get paid such riches to do this job." "You get paid?" "Mr. Socrates said he is setting aside a fund for my retirement. I assume he has done the same for you." "I didn't know we could retire." "That's the whole lark of it, Modo. Most of us won't get to live long enough to retire. Oh, well, it's better than pickpocketing, I guarantee that." After breakfast, they went to Merchants National Bank, where Modo withdrew $7,000, filling his wallet and stuffing the rest in his portmanteau. They gathered up their luggage, took a cab to shop on Broadway, bought photographic equipment, then returned to the port. They were deposited near Castle Garden. The landing was noisy, with draymen and deckhands shouting and fruit vendors, their baskets on carts, bellowing out their prices. Travellers streamed into the city. Occasionally a steam whistle cut through the din, loud enough to shake the very docks. "Passenger liners won't alter their course for us," Octavia said. "So we must hire a smaller ship." Modo nodded. "It would be best to have a steamship. Anything sailing under canvas would be far too slow." "Then let's find our ship, Modo. Look for the ones with smoking funnels. That means their boilers are being stoked and they'll soon leave port." "I know that," Modo snapped, which was true, for he'd read enough sailing novels. He was growing tired of how she always tried to teach him things. Partway down the docks, they found a ship called the Hugo. Smoke puffed out of its smokestack. It had a rusted iron hull and was so shabby it looked as if removing one rivet would make the entire ship collapse and sink straight to the bottom. almost seaworthy, Octavia said. Maybe there's something better. Modo lifted their luggage and continued down the pier, but they returned a half hour later to the Hugo. There's really no other choice, he said, and Mr. Socrates did say we should go at once. They approached several seamen and dock workers. I would like to meet the captain of the Hugo, Modo said, and the men stared at him without moving. Octavia coughed and pointed at her palm. Modo reached into his wallet and brought out a dollar bill. For your troubles. A few minutes later they were being rowed in a boat by a husky sailor who reeked of whiskey. His red-rimmed eyes were glued to Octavia. Modo wanted to poke the man's peepers out, even though Octavia ignored the sailor, gazing out across the water, umbrella in hand. They pulled up to the huge side of the Hugo, and the seaman seemed to shake the boat as much as possible as Modo and Octavia stood up to grab the gangway ladder. When they'd climbed to the top, Modo looked down to see the drunkard teetering and waving his arms as though bothered by insects, before falling into the water to the laughter of the seamen remaining on the dock. That'll teach you, Modo thought. The wooden deck of the Hugo was scarred by weather and littered by a mess of rope, boxes, and nets. A crate of black, rotted bananas had broken open amidships. We'd like to speak to the captain, Octavia said to the first deckhand they met. Yes, we would, Modo added quickly, to show he was in charge. They were taken up a set of stairs to the upper deck. The sailor knocked on the door and shouted,
Captain, guests here to see you.
Then he left them standing alone. Nothing happened for several moments. Do you think he's there? Octavia asked. Modo shrugged and knocked again.
Captain, we're here about passage on your ship.
The door swung open to reveal a short man in trousers and a shirt with the sleeves torn off. His arms were tattooed with coiled snakes. He was thin as a ferret, his eyes two black coals, and his matted, oily hair was parted in the middle. Modo guessed he was another deckhand. Is the captain here? Modo asked.
I am the captain, you fool. What are you doing on my ship?
What is your destination?
Hamburg.
Ah, that's perfect, Octavia said.
Perfect?
Ah, yes, we have... Octavia began, but Modo cut in. A wedding to attend, he finished. He shot Octavia a look. As the husband, he was supposed to make such arrangements man to man.
I don't take passengers. They talk. They eat. They get in the way. Not even if you offered me $200.
What about $2,000? Octavia said. Again, Modo scowled at her. The captain's eyes widened. He pursed his thin lips and ran a hand over his greasy scalp, then stepped back and bowed.
You are so very welcome on my ship. Captain Goss at your service. You'll find the Hugo may not look like much on the outside, but she'll do 12 knots with the boilers fully stoked and the sails set.
12 knots? That is fast, Modo exclaimed, knowing they'd be lucky to hit 10 knots. We are Mr. and Mrs. Walkin. I'm a photographer, and my wife is my assistant. I wonder, on our way to Hamburg, there is a particular ocean vista we would very much like to photograph. A place where the slant of light reflects in an amazingly perfect way on the capturing lens of the camera. It's simply stunning, I'm told.
Where is this vista?
Modo told him the latitude and longitude. That will be another $1,000, Captain Goss said without hesitation. It's a day out of our way. I have to pay my crew a bonus, and there are coal supplies to consider. I myself make nothing.
Agreed, Octavia said.
Agreed, Modo repeated, giving her the eye. She would never be able to play the wife correctly. My men will bring your bags aboard, and my first mate will show you to your cabin. Goss whistled, so loudly that Modo's ears rang. 40 minutes later, the ship was moving out to sea. They had been given the first mate's cabin, after paying him $100 so that he would sleep on a bunk in the seamen's quarters. The cabin was tiny, with a small cot that Octavia claimed, saying, It's your turn to sleep on the floor, husband dearest.
I'd have it no other way, Modo replied with false sweetness.
A smoke and coal-smudged porthole looked out on the ocean.
Modo's stomach churned, but not nearly the way it had on their first crossing of the Atlantic. Soon his face began to burn and ache, and he was forced to put on his mask. He drew a thick cloak out of the portmanteau and threw it over himself to hide all his bumps and humps from Octavia's eyes. How he hated the way his back twisted! The cabin was so small, he was certain Octavia would eventually see every iota of his ugliness. Whenever her eyes flitted over him, he wanted to retreat like a rat into a hole. He set up a sheet in one corner for both of them to change behind when they needed to. The Hugo splashed and fought its way northward. The farther they travelled, the shorter the daylight hours became. Modo spent most of his time in their wretched room. He would change his shape to go for an infrequent walk, then return to the cabin, feigning illness. Meals were brought right to their door, but were never hot and never good, and mostly seemed to be made of an unidentifiable overcooked meat. "It must be buffalo," Octavia declared after several meals. "I've heard it's quite stringy." Occasionally the captain invited them to sup at his private dining table, which was little more than a slab of wood in his cabin. The metal plates were nailed down, and it looked as though a decade had passed since they were last wiped. "I did have a lovely basket of apples," he told them when the salted pork was done, "but they disappeared down someone's gullet. The lash will get to the bottom of it. So drink lots of lemonade instead. That'll keep the scurvy away." He smiled wryly. The next day, while Modo walked around the deck, he tried to picture a life at sea and decided it wasn't for him. No place to climb if there was danger. Well, that wasn't true. There was the crow's nest, at least. Without a second thought, he scrambled to the top, joining the bald seaman who sat on his perch, staring out into the vast distance. "You climb well for a fancy gentleman," the man said. "Thank you," Modo answered. "I just wanted to get a good look at this watery world. Go ahead, feast your peepers. There's nothing and everything to see." Modo could feel the sway of the ship much more up here, but it didn't bother his stomach. He enjoyed the familiar, wonderful feeling of being above the world, and his peepers could see much farther than they could from the rooftops of London. The water seemed endless. The sun was setting, even though it was only 6 o'clock in the evening. Down on the deck he saw two men toiling away at the daily swabbing. Then he counted the lifeboats. 6. Altogether they might hold 30 men. There were at least 100 people on the Hugo. "There are only 6 lifeboats," Modo said. "What happens if we sink?" "Well, gent," the man smiled broadly, exposing a missing tooth. "On a civilized boat, it'd be women and children first. I can't vouch for this being a civilized boat, if it were to come to that. Best to just make your peace with Jesus, Joe, and the good Lord." He chuckled. Modo's stomach suddenly didn't feel very good. The ship had made many journeys without sinking, he told himself. It would be fine. Just fine. On the morning of the 7th day of the voyage, the Hugo gave a great shudder. The engine slowed, and the anchor was let down with a thunderous rattle of chains. Someone pounded on Modo and Olivia's door.
"We've arrived, Mr. and Mrs. Walkin."
They recognized Goss's voice.
"We'll be right out," Modo shouted.
He was still in his nightclothes, the net, mask, and a nightcap.
"You're quite the picture," Octavia kidded. "Now avert your eyes."
He did so as Octavia took 2 steps from the cot to get dressed behind the hanging sheet. Modo hid under his own blanket to change his features. He was still sleepy and had to struggle to remember the right face.
"I wish you would tell me what you're doing," Octavia said. She was already dressed. "Just the usual ritual," he said between clenched teeth.
When he was done, he wiped his forehead and lowered the blanket. She smiled.
"Well, whatever you did worked. You look very dashing."
Cheeks burning, Modo changed behind the hanging sheet and led the way out, carrying the photographic equipment. It was after 9, and the sun was only beginning to rise over a rather unremarkable grey stretch of ocean, nothing but rolling waves in the distance. The captain and 3 of his men were standing near the main mast.
"Not sure why you wanted to see this amazing vista," Goss said.
but here it is.
Are you certain they're the correct coordinates? Octavia asked.
Goss furrowed his brow.
Of course. He pointed north. That way is Iceland. I know the sea like the back of my hand. Remind me what you want to do here.
It's all about the light, Modo said, unfolding the wooden legs of his tripod.
Octavia held out a light meter.
This latitude and longitude and the refraction from the curvature of the earth create perfect light.
Modo was pleased with his use of baffling jargon.
Perfect light for what?
For portraits, Captain Goss. Portraits. Your crew would make good subjects for our study.
A photograph? Of those dogs?
Goss's eyes lit up momentarily, and Modo seized on what he saw was the captain's vanity.
Not them so much, sir, as you. They will be good background material. You should be front and centre.
Your face is very Roman and powerful, Captain, Octavia added. Such cheekbones and a strong jaw.
She turned to Modo.
He's truly perfect, my husband.
Goss blushed slightly.
Modo raised an eyebrow at this.
Are you dressed appropriately? Your image will be recorded forever, you know, Modo said.
Goss patted at his hair.
Give me a moment. I forgot my sash. Should I wear a sabre?
Do you even have to ask, Captain?
Octavia said.
Of course you should. We need to capture the drama of your occupation.
Once the captain had scurried off, Modo and Octavia went to the rail of the Hugo and looked out over the water.
Well, she said, we're here. Now what?
One of the men sneezed. It seemed rather close, but when Modo turned, the nearest sailor was several yards away.
Frankly, Octavia, Modo said,
my guess is we're just supposed to get the lay of the land, so to speak. I think it's a long shot if Mr. Socrates believes some fish will just suddenly rise out of the ocean to greet us. The Grand Poisson could be anywhere. We'll take a few photographs of the area. Perhaps Mr. Socrates will have some use for them.
The Hugo lurched to one side and Modo grabbed the rail. Octavia latched onto the same spot and their hands touched.
What was that? She asked. I don't know.
The first mate shouted,
we've lost our anchor, sir.
Captain Goss burst out of his cabin and marched down the stairs, holding his belt, a scabbard clicking against his heel.
Lost our anchor? But that's impossible. The chain has been cut, sir.
Cut?
By what?
He turned to the nearest deckhand.
Tell the engineer to put on steam. Move, you lackey!
Modo was about to shout out that they'd paid to come here, they needed to stay, when the ship was hit on the port side so hard that it tilted toward starboard. The railing Modo was holding, worn by time and rusted by salt, broke, and he slipped over the edge. Octavia grabbed his shoulder and he whipped out his arm just in time to catch hold of a piece of the broken railing, leaving him hanging in midair. He pawed the rusted side of the ship until Octavia was able to grab his free hand. Something splashed into the water below.
Don't let go, Modo,
she cried, as the last bit of railing creaked under the strain of his weight. It wouldn't hold long. Both of them would fall.
Where were those bloody seamen? Couldn't they see their passenger's predicament?
Modo looked into Octavia's eyes and saw her determination. She wouldn't let go. He couldn't have her falling into the water too. He pictured his wrist expanding, growing larger, and a moment later it began to do so.
What are you doing?
Octavia screamed as she lost her grip on him. He tried to find some final, memorable words to leave her with, but all that came out of his mouth was,
oh!
As he fell into the Atlantic.